Good day, everyone, and welcome to today's IBM iSeries Nation Citizens Chat conference call. Today's call is being recorded. At this time, for opening remarks and introductions, I would like to turn the call over to your host, Malcolm Haynes. Please go ahead.
Holly, thank you very much. We have two excellent speakers today, so I won't delay and go straight into that. We have Doug Mack and Mike Kane. Doug will talk first, and then Mike will talk after that. Then we will have a question and answer session. So, Doug, over to you.
Okay, thanks, Malcolm, and good morning or good afternoon to everybody here in the U.S. where Mike and I are. It's tax day today, so many happy returns as well. Hopefully everybody has a copy of the presentation materials. I'm going to just spend a couple minutes here talking about some data integration issues and then turn it over to Mike, who's going to delve into some SQL performance issues. If you could turn to the second page, page 2, DB2 UDB for iSeries homepage. Before I get into the data integration subjects, I'd just like to point out that there's a wealth of information about DB2 UDB for iSeries accessible from this newly designed website. It includes links to technical papers, positioning information across the DB2 family. There's some benefits and feature verbiage for DB2 running in OS 400. There's a lot of self-running demonstrations that also have narration that accompany them. So if you want to get a feel for some of the DB2-related products or how things like iSeries Navigator work with DB2, you can click on these AVI files and download some self-running demos. We've also included some educational roadmaps because one of the questions we get a lot, for instance, is how should an Oracle or a SQL Server DBA learn about DB2 UDB for iSeries? So there's a specific roadmap for that type of a person who wants to learn more about DB2. And then if you end up in ibm.com/software/DB2, in other words, the distributed DB2 website, it's sometimes hard to get back into the DB2 UDB for iSeries specific information. So again, just want to point out that this homepage is in red there on your chart, ibm.com/iSeries/DB2, and it's your portal to everything DB2 UDB for iSeries. All right, the next page is just the agenda. I've already mentioned that, and I'm going to quickly go through some data integration issues, talk about what's new related to that, and then Mike's going to talk more about the SQL query environment and some performance issues related to using SQL in your applications. Okay, the next chart is titled Interoperability. Hopefully everybody is there now. There are many ways to share data and move data or access data from applications seamlessly across multiple DB2 or heterogeneous database management systems. We will discuss some of these, including DB2 Information Integrator, DB2 EveryPlace, some of the other topics that are listed on this chart, things like net.data, Data Propagator, and the DRDA support that are built into OS 400 have all been around for quite some time, so we're probably not going to spend a whole lot of time on those because we're going to concentrate a little bit on what's new. The next chart is titled DB2 Connect. DB2 Connect is a product that is a DB2 family connectivity solution. While oftentimes we'll still generally recommend the iSeries Access ODBC driver as a native driver for Windows applications and the JDBC driver in the Java toolkit for Java-based applications to access DB2, DB2 Connect does provide some interesting scenarios that may be a great fit for certain situations. DB2 Connect is commonly used for connecting applications to DB2 running in a mainframe or in a Unix or Linux environment. One of the things that it does provide is a single client interface or a gateway function from those applications into any DB2 backend. In addition, DB2 Connect adds federated capabilities such that I could do things like join data in one SQL call from my application, joining data from multiple DB2 family members, and that includes Informix as well. One of the other interesting things about DB2 Connect is that it allows us to leverage the DB2 plugins to the Microsoft.NET framework. The IBM Toronto Lab has done a lot of work to enable the Visual Studio.NET development environment to DB2, improving the experience of working with DB2 from this particular environment. If you look at the next page, titled DB2 Connect Plugins for Visual Studio.NET, this is a representative example of the kind of plugins that are included that you get with DB2 Connect that can be used with DB2 UDB for iSeries. These are no-charge plugins and include direct toolbar links to DB2 centers, including Development Center, DB2 projects and DB2 Explorer navigational tools, and built-in wizards, skeleton code, and something called IntelliSense for creating DB2 objects such as stored procedures and trigger programs. And as I mentioned before, there's a self-running demo of these plugins that can be accessed from that IBM DB2 UDB for iSeries homepage. IntelliSense, by the way, is really the idea of, you know, as you start typing in the development environment, be able to prompt for specific commands, similar to like typing a word in Microsoft Word and having it autocorrect or automatically suggest a specific verbiage to include in there. The idea here is to make it easy for that Microsoft developer to use DB2. The next chart is called DB2 Information Integrator. I mentioned federated support and the ability for DB2 Connect to be used to be able to join data from a single SQL statement from different DB2 backends. The next question then becomes, well, how do I join data from Oracle or other non-DB2 databases? And so I can add a product called DB2 Information Integrator to the scenario, which does just that. It's a heterogeneous database middleware component from IBM. So, for example, an RPG application, and the RPG application has to be using embedded SQL versus native RPG, but assuming that it's using SQL, the RPG application can actually go out and connect to DB2 Information Integrator, start executing SQL statements to it, and those SQL statements can actually be routed to an Oracle database to return the result set back to that RPG application as if it were talking to another DB2 instance. The bottom bullet there is the URL that's most important in terms of giving you some information on how you would go about setting up DB2 Information Integrator in an iSeries environment. And the next slide, titled DB2 Information Integrator Example, is just representative of what's in that paper. I'm not going to go through that in detail, but it's basically, you know, a one-time setup and configuration to set up an Oracle wrapper. Identify the name and the type of the target Oracle database, and you do that one time per Oracle instance. You specify the Oracle user ID that will be used for Oracle data access, and then define a nickname for the Oracle table that needs to be accessed. And then once you've done that setup, any SQL interface can actually read the Oracle database as if you're talking to another DB2. And it's not just Oracle. I'm using Oracle as an example, but SQL Server, Sybase, Informix are all supported with DB2 Information Integrators. The next chart is new iSeries packaging software additions. And this really isn't new news so much as it is maybe information that's not well known. But as of last January, with some of the software enhancements that we made, when you order an iSeries system, you actually select either a standard or an enterprise edition software package to accompany that server. And if you get the enterprise edition version, you get a lot of software included in that. The DB2 related products are highlighted in red, and these are things like DB2 UDB for iSeries, which you've always gotten with OS 400. You also get a 5-user license of DB2 UDB for Linux, which is the distributed version of DB2. Data propagator, data replication technology is included. And then a little product called DB2 extenders. It's actually a set of XML extenders as well as text extenders. The XML extenders, for instance, help me better integrate XML data with DB2 data so that I can decompose XML documents and store the data within DB2 or compose XML documents fairly easily from data that's contained in DB2. Then there's the SQL and Query Development Toolkit and the DB2 Symmetric Multiprocessing Feature, SMP, which provides database parallelism, which Mike is going to talk a little bit more about. The next chart is called DB2 for Linux Offerings, and again, we include a 5-user license within the Enterprise Edition. And the reason I wanted to point this out is because I've talked earlier about DB2 Connect. DB2 Connect is also available in the Linux for iSeries environment. There are several different versions of distributed DB2. The version that we include with Enterprise Edition that runs in Linux is called Workgroup Server Edition. But as of last November, we also include a small footprint version of DB2 that runs in PDA or mobile devices called DB2 EveryPlace. So with DB2 for Linux that's included with Enterprise Edition, you can actually have 5 users running a version of DB2 in a personal digital assistant, like a Palm Pilot, for instance. That also includes a synchronization server that would run in Linux that allows me to keep the data from DB2 in OS400 in sync with the database that's running in those PDAs. And that's pretty much it for me. I'm going to turn it over to Mike Cain at this point. Mike is the team leader for the Terraplex Center in Rochester, Minnesota.
Thanks, Doug. Starting on page 11, which is the next chart, I want to go into a little more detail in the next few minutes regarding SQL, query optimization, and some of the high-level things that you need to be aware of when using SQL against an iSeries server, as well as looking at query performance. On the next page, page 12, I want to start with some enhancements that we first delivered in V5R2 last year, and we will continue to deliver into the future as new releases come out. We are continually upgrading and enhancing and re-engineering the database capabilities of DB2 for iSeries, which is integrated within OS400. As Doug mentioned, database is a very important part of almost any application today. Query performance is absolutely integral to making sure your application performs and is available. So what we have done in the recent announcement, V5R2, is deliver a new SQL query engine as part of DB2 for iSeries within OS400. This new engine includes things like self-optimization, on-demand statistics, and is providing a foundation for future enhancements that we hope to deliver real soon. One of the primary benefits of this technology is obviously improved performance. This is especially true in analytical environments and more complex query environments. Because this new engine includes new primitives, strategies, and methods down in the base of the operating system and DB2, as well as a new re-engineered query optimizer, we are seeing excellent results from this particular engine and technology, and can point to it as one of the reasons that DB2 for iSeries and OS400 can be used for a database server in your application environment. When V5R2 was first delivered, this technology was part of the base operating system because DB2 for iSeries is part of the base operating system. We made additional enhancements to this new query engine, and those were delivered in May of 2003 in the form of PTFs. More information about this particular engine, its benefits and attributes, as well as more information how to obtain the latest PTFs can be found at the URL at the bottom of this chart. Again, this is a URL that is off of our DB2 website that Doug had mentioned earlier. in addition to information about the PTFs, there is a link to an excellent red book that was written to describe the characteristics and attributes of this new engine and some of the more detailed features. On the next chart, I want to cover a question that we're asked quite often. Given the fact that our database engine within OS 400 has really been around for a long time, you could argue that the iSeries and its predecessors, AS400 and System38, have always enjoyed a integrated relational database, even though we didn't always talk about it. That particular database didn't always support SQL because the engine came out, the database engine came out before SQL was popular and the de facto standard in the marketplace. So there's an interface into the database, DB2, through high-level languages and CL. And that's what many people have used for years and years. But we also support the interface called Structured Query Language into the same database engine. And one reason that this interface is important and needs to be considered is it is the de facto standard for database connectivity and access within the industry. It allows more portability of code, more access to skills in the marketplace, because if you are building an application in a Windows environment, in a Unix or Linux environment, there's a very high probability that if you access the database, you're going to use SQL. Also, SQL is the strategic interface for OS 400 and DB2 for iSeries. So even in Rochester, we view SQL as the strategic interface to the database for creating objects and for accessing the data running queries. In addition, as we make enhancements to the query engine, these set of enhancements that have come out in V5R2, those benefits are only available through SQL-based queries. Regardless of interface, ODBC, JDBC, static, embedded SQL, it has to be SQL to get the benefit of the new query engine. SQL also provides some capabilities that are not available through the high-level language interfaces. If you're going to use Java or use the WebSphere environment, or if you're going to use Microsoft's application environment that Doug talked about, you're going to interface with the database using SQL. There are additional data types and object-oriented concepts that are available via SQL, large object support, data links, user-defined functions, types, and tables are all available via SQL. The other trend that we're seeing in the industry is that more and more business logic and functionality is being driven into the database engine from an application perspective. Instead of relying on your program logic to enforce business rules and do all the work, in many cases we can rely on the underlying database engine to do that work on our behalf. To that end, we are providing some functionality like identity columns, in the future sequence objects, triggers, things that allow the database engine to perform your business logic and perform work on your behalf much closer to the hardware and closer to the data. There's also some technology within the database engine that is only available to the query optimizer in terms of running queries. One such piece of technology is encoded vector indexes. This is a unique patented technology that IBM invented that we enjoy on the iSeries within OS 400, and this allows us to add some additional types of indexing capability and access capability to the database engine. Again, only available via SQL. The other important trend within the industry is the concept of multi-tier applications, two-tier, three-tier. And in that environment, there is almost always a database server or a tier that contains the data and provides the data access to the application. More and more, we're finding that the iSeries is becoming a database server in that environment. And SQL is the interface, and the database engine is the mechanism that allows the iSeries to become a database server, regardless of where the application runs. SQL can allow you to minimize your lines of code and be more productive with your application. And then finally, there are things that we can do within the database engine that are very difficult or time-consuming to do programmatically. One such thing is parallelism, the ability to throw more resources at your problem, use simultaneous parallel threads or tasks to get the work done in a faster time. Continuing on the next chart, page 14, the other thing to realize when using SQL is SQL was really designed as set-at-a-time processing. The idea here is that we are operating on a logical set of data. Native high-level language I.O. was developed for record-at-a-time or row-at-a-time processing. In other words, you're going to access and do the data processing on a row-by-row basis. If we try to use SQL just as a replacement for high-level language I.O. and perform that same record-at-a-time, SQL can be inefficient at that process because it is geared and designed to do set-at-a-time processing. So that's one of the areas that people sometimes have trouble with when they just replace their I.O. logic with SQL. In other words, they just change the interface to the database and do not change the surrounding logic or application behavior. Another goal when we think about data-centric processing and using the iSeries and OS400 as a database server is we want the database engine to do as much as possible. We keep the processing closer to the hardware. We keep it closer to the operating system and the data. One simple example is the database engine knows how to join tables or files together. If you give the entire request to the optimizer and database engine and allow it to determine the best way to perform the join and deliver you the result, that'll be much more efficient than trying to do that programmatically and your application reading multiple rows and doing the join within your application logic. Changing topics just a little bit on page 15, I want to keep the theme of the iSeries as a database server, but I want to introduce another aspect to logical partitioning. The iSeries, along with the zSeries, is one of the best logical partitioning systems in the world. This capability allows us to do some interesting things in terms of multi-tier applications and database serving. This picture on page 15 demonstrates some of the connectivity and some of the multi-tier capability that server consolidation or a multi-tier application running on a single system could provide. In this example, one partition is going to act as the database server. It's going to run OS400 and DB2 for iSeries. We have a second partition running OS400 as a client, so any application running within OS400 can connect to the database server within LPAR1 using some of those mechanisms that Doug mentioned earlier. Again, all of those mechanisms are integrated and built into OS400. We also enjoy the ability to run Linux in a partition on the iSeries hardware. So in partition number 3, we can run a version of Linux. And if your application is running in Linux, it too could connect to OS400 and DB2 through the common interfaces such as JDBC, ODBC, or DRDA. We have a statement of direction that says we will support running AIX in a partition on iSeries hardware. So when that is available, we could have AIX running as an operating system. You could have a Unix application running. That application, again, could use OS 400 and DB2, connect to that partition, and pull the data out using JDBC or DRDA. While we don't run Windows in a partition on the Power4 hardware, we do support running Windows on an integrated X-Series server or an outboard server through the X-Series adapter. So once again, I could have a Windows application connected to my partition 1 and then access the data through JDBC, ODBC, OLEDB, or .NET. We also do support DRDA. So once again, you could have a multi-tier application all running on the same iSeries quote-unquote system and use OS 400 and DB2 as the database server for those various applications. In addition, this provides another advantage because we can do virtual I/O as well as virtual Ethernet. So in effect, this traffic could all stay within the confines of the system and never go out on the network. On the next page, we want to include a few more details on the middleware and tie together what Doug had talked about earlier to this picture of using OS 400 and DB2 as a database server for various clients. Here are the same clients on the left side. OS 400, AIX, Linux, Windows, and those clients are going to connect to OS 400. In the case of OS 400 as a client, all of the middleware is built in, so all the connectivity exists as part of the operating system and the database. In terms of AIX, you could use the iSeries Toolbox JDBC driver. You could use the middleware that Doug talked about, DB2 Connect, or DB2 Information Integrator as the mechanism to come into DB2 for iSeries. In the case of a Linux application, again, we could use the iSeries Toolbox for JDBC. We could use DB2 Connect. And we also provide an iSeries ODBC driver for Linux. In the case of Windows, we have our iSeries Access product, which includes the ODBC and JDBC drivers. Or you could use DB2 Connect or DB2 Information Integrator as the connection mechanism. So when talking about how my client connects to an OS 400 database server, this picture might be important to understand the connectivity options as well as some of the middleware that exists. On the next page, page 17, I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about performance. When we talk about a database server and a transaction that involves database access, we need to understand that there could be a lot more going on than just accessing the data or fulfilling the database request. One of the things that is key when the end user hits enter on the application, there is a lot of activity that's going on besides just the database access. So it's important to understand what else is occurring in the transaction before we just blame the database. But if we want to focus on just the database portion of that transaction, we need to understand what else might be going on as a result of that database access or transaction. Things like journaling or logging can affect performance. Index maintenance, when we do insert, updates, or deletes. We might have constraints in place, and we have to then enforce those constraints. There could be locking going on. The iSeries, more often than not, is used as a multi-user system. That's what it was designed for. And so we have a robust row-level locking mechanism. But again, that could prevent someone from accessing data, and to the end user, it looks like slow performance. You could have business logic within the database engine that is triggered by a trigger on your operation. So there's extra work going on for every piece of the transaction that you're asking the system to do. So you really need to understand what else is going on within your particular system or transaction. It's important to understand the architecture of your database and the underlying components of the system that are used to support that architecture. What does your data model look like? What does your indexing strategy look like? What else is going on in the system from a database perspective? The other key part, the part that I spend a lot of time on, is really the art and science of query optimization. Simply put, instead of the application developer or programmer being responsible for how we access and do the data processing, it's now the query optimizer and database engine's responsibility to figure out the best or fastest mechanism to fulfill your request. That is based on things like the available access methods and strategies, based on what indexes are available and your particular indexing strategy. Also, it's based on what else the optimizer and database engine can take advantage of: work management, parallelism, other things that are going on in the system. It's very important to understand this aspect of how the database works for iSeries and OS400, because every database engine and query optimizer are different, including the other DB2s. It's important to understand the application model. What is the application asking the database to do? Is it one complex request, or is it 1,000 requests? And then finally, we don't have time within this short presentation to cover it, but simply put, there are tools and methods available to identify these areas, to visualize this information, and then to understand what the optimizer and the database engine are doing so that you can take the appropriate action, whether that be creating indexes or employing SMP or changing your system configuration. On page 18, from a performance perspective, if you get nothing else out of this presentation, remember that the number one thing that you can do to positively affect performance within DB2 on iSeries is to implement a good indexing strategy. Within DB2 for iSeries, indexes provide the optimizer not only with implementation methods, in other words, the ability to read the data by key, but it also provides the optimizer critical information on the metadata and statistics about the data within the table. Things like data skew, the distribution of the data, how many values, cardinality, can all be provided to the optimizer at optimization time through these indexes. Without the indexes in place, not only can the optimizer not read by key, but it's blind. It doesn't have any way to understand your data. And so it has to make guesses as to what the data looks like in terms of data skew, cardinality, and distribution. And that may result in a poor access plan or a poor access method. As soon as you create the appropriate indexes, now the optimizer can, quote-unquote, see the data and understand the data much better, and that normally results in a much better access plan, as well as we have a permanent object available for the optimizer to consider so that it can read by key. All of this information is contained within an indexing and statistics strategy white paper. That white paper can be found at this URL, and again, this is off of the DB2 website that Doug mentioned earlier. That is both in PDF format and HTML format. So I suggest that if you haven't already taken a look at this, please do. On the next page, page 19, is just a very brief overview of what you can find in that white paper. The bottom line is you must create some indexes, in other words, keyed logical files, for your SQL environment. Again, this provides statistics and implementation options to the optimizer. In the white paper, we talk about different approaches. Both should be considered: proactively creating indexes based on your data model and your application behavior, and then reactively creating indexes based on what the data actually looks like in the table or files, the behavior of the application, and the behavior of the optimizer in the database engine. Some of the tools that we talk about that can be used to help get feedback from the optimizer is something called Visual Explain. This is part of iSeries Access and iSeries Navigator. We also have database monitors to monitor what the optimizer is doing and gather feedback in the form of data within a table. And then we also can produce OS 400 messages within a job log as long as your job is in what we call debug mode. Again, all of this information is in the white paper that I mentioned earlier. On page 20, many people ask, why is query optimization so difficult? Or why is the query optimizer changing the access plan? Or what can I do to help the optimizer? On page 20, we have a picture that sort of represents what the optimizer is looking at during optimization. Again, the query optimizer's job is to find the fastest access method for your query on your system with your data. So it has to take into account all of these factors when it optimizes your request. If you were to change any of these factors, the query plan might change legitimately. In other words, if you were to add memory or allow the system to use parallelism or have faster processors or your data grows significantly, you would want the optimizer to change. This is part of the on-demand strategy and the ability for the optimizer to react automatically to changes in your environment without intervention from a DBA or an application programmer. On the other side, that means that the plan could be dynamic and could change as the environment changes. On the next page, if we go a little bit deeper, another thing to consider is that the database engine has a set of methods and strategies available. The optimizer's job is to take this set of strategies, this set of methods represented by the circles on the left, and assemble those into a query plan or a query graph. Those different methods and strategies get assembled in such a way to achieve the best performance for your plan based on those factors we talked about earlier. Those same methods could be used in a different way for a different query. So at some level, it's important to understand what methods are available. How do I ensure that the query optimizer has all of the available methods at its disposal? And then give the optimizer a chance to assemble these methods in such a way that I achieve best performance. This is one reason why moving from one release to another could provide significant gains in performance, because in many cases, we add additional methods, additional strategies in the new release for the optimizer to choose from. Creating an index gives the optimizer additional strategies and methods because now the optimizer has the ability to use that index object to access the data in a new and different way. Finally, on this chart, Visual Explain is one of the tools that we can employ to visualize or render this query graph so that a human being can make some sense out of what's going on. In other words, it's a mechanism that the optimizer can use to provide feedback in a graphical way as to what plan we're going to use for a given query. On page 22, what we like to say is the query optimizer is adaptable. Believe it or not, this is a good thing. This is one of the benefits that we enjoy on iSeries and OS 400. It also enables us to have a minimum of input and a minimum of support from a DBA for this query environment. So the optimizer is going to adapt to your database request, your query. It's going to adapt to the database model and the underlying data. And it's also going to adapt to the system environment. Again, if you change any of those pieces, The optimizer is going to recognize that change and may choose to re-optimize your query, again, hoping to find the best plan, the fastest plan to fulfill your request. This can cause frustration in some environments because the optimizer, again, is changing. It is adapting to what's going on in the system. And an end user may not understand what actually changed in the environment that caused the optimizer to re-optimize. And it could be something as simple as the amount of data changed in the table. Instead of 10,000 rows, we now have 1,000,000 rows. And so the optimizer wants to find a better plan. So if you're interested in learning more about DB2, the query engine and query optimization, or if your role or your job is an application developer using SQL or an analyst tuning an SQL environment, what are your next steps? The biggest thing you can do is get educated. One of the quickest ways to get educated is we have some conferences coming up. Twice a year we present at Common, which is a large user group, and we do a lot of work in the DB2 area, specifically in terms of performance and query optimization. We have iSeries technical conferences twice a year where we also have sessions on this. We have a four-day workshop that's available, and the URLs are listed on this page 23. Certainly download and become familiar with the information in the indexing and strategies white paper. That would be your best first start. And then get some hands-on. If you haven't used SQL or if you don't think you understand what the optimizer is doing, take some time to use SQL, try to get some of the feedback, use the mechanisms that we talk about to understand what the optimizer is doing, start small, and experience what's going on from an SQL perspective. And then if you need help, one of the first places to start is the DB2 website that Doug talked about. There's a lot of additional information there that we have not covered in this presentation. And there are some other folks that can come out and help on a fee basis if you need to employ consultants or analysts as well. At this time, I'd like to open it up for questions. So, Holly, if you're available to open up the lines for questions, I think we're ready for that.
Thank you, Mike. Actually, before we take your questions, we are going to conduct a brief electronic survey. After I finish reading the entire question and all of the possible responses, please answer by firmly pressing the star key followed by the number on your touch-tone phone that corresponds to your choice. If you are using a speakerphone today, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Our first question today is, on a scale of 1 to 4, how valuable did you find Doug's chat? Press star 1 for very valuable. Press star 2 for valuable. Press star 3 for somewhat valuable. Press star 4 for of no value. And we'll pause for a moment. Our final question today is, on a scale of 1 to 4, how valuable did you find Mike's chat? Press star 1 for very valuable. Press star 2 for valuable. Press star 3 for somewhat valuable. Press star 4 for of no value. And that does conclude today's survey. We appreciate you participating in that. At this time, we will now go to your questions. If you have a question or a comment on either presentation today, please press star 1 on your touchtone phone. Again, that's star 1 for questions or comments. We'll hear first from Eric Songy of the Standard Company.
Yes, my name is Eric Songy. I'm with the Standard Companies in New Orleans. We are wrapping up a DB2 every place implementation on the Palm Pilots, and one of the things that we have run into is the lack of consistency of the versions between what's available on the Palm, what's available on the Windows environment, and what's available on the OS 400 environment. We are having to use Data Propagator version 7 on the AS 400, which is an unsupported version, because in addition to using DB2 EveryPlace, we are implementing WebSphere EveryPlace Access. And one of the things I need to understand is what is IBM's plans to get all of these products across all of these platforms to stay in sync as each release is released, for them to all release together and to keep them in sync, because it's causing us some real problems in getting this application up and running on our Palm Pilots.
Yeah, this is Doug Mack. What I would suggest you do, I'm not going to be able to answer that question specifically today, but if you could shoot me an email, I'm going to have to gather the answer to that from a variety of different development groups. So if you could, send me an email at MACD, it's M-A-C-K-D, at us.ibm.com, and what I'll do is try to work towards getting you a response.
Okay. I've got a second question that has to do with one of the things that we have found in both the beauty of using the AS400 environment, as well as an issue that has come up, is the databases. When you create the tables on the AS400 environment, you can use a lot of the AS400 native applications like DFU or other third-party applications like DBU to get access and look at your data, as well as the standard SQL. But one of the things that we found is the size limitations on the fields of the 10 characters is quite limiting, because all of the other platforms support the much larger characters. If you use the larger number of characters, then you get encrypted or, you know, numeric named fields that become quite difficult to use on the 400 environment. Are there any plans to increase the size of the table names and the size of the field names in the native environment, so that for those of us that have been very long-standing users of the 400, we can continue to use some of the AS400 tools and get the same results that we get from the PC-based tools?
Hi, Eric. This is Mike. Basically, the simple answer is I know of no plans to change the underlying representation of the objects, thus the names and the ultimate size of the fields, because that's part of OS400, not just DB2. But as you've mentioned, there can be some compatibility issues in terms of creating tables with SQL, using long names for the table view and index names, as well as the column names. One of the things we recommend, it's not perfect, but you can go in and rename things, come up with aliases and stuff, to help that 10-character name be more meaningful when you look at it, but again, you're limited to just the 10 characters. What we've been asking people to do, and what we do from a solutions enablement standpoint, is try to point towards the SQL-based tools, because they allow everyone to see the long names. But you're going to continue to have this dilemma when you bridge both worlds. You create your objects with SQL, you take advantage of the long names, but then you use what we would think of as an OS 400 interface or an OS 400 based tool to only see the short names, because that particular tool is probably not using SQL to access the data. Thus, it's only getting the short names back through its interface.
Right. Well, it's one of the things that we would just like to, you know, voice here is the request to have that included in future plans for in enhancing DB2 is, you know, the major change within the OS 400 operating system of expanding the files, file names, the size of the file names, and the field names, so that they conform to all of the other platforms.
I have that noted, and I will take that down.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And at this time, I'd like to remind the audience today, it is star one for questions. Moving on, we'll hear from Nicole Cyphers of the Taylor Corp.
Yes, in a recent update on the DB2 UDB for P-Series, et cetera, they described some new features such as SQL merge, query sampling, also talked about deferred lock with their optimizer, and then also listening in on the improvements with query patrolling. Are any of those available in iSeries and or maybe in a slightly different variant?
Hi, Nicole. This is Mike Kane. Let me answer this first by pointing out that there are really three DB2 code bases, and this is a source of confusion because we throw the name around DB2 or DB2 UDB. But in reality, there are different DB2 products based on history and based on the underlying system architecture that they run on. For example, DB2 for AIX. That is based on AIX, file structure, operating system, those sorts of things. DB2 for iSeries is based on OS 400 and it's integrated. And it provides features and functions that we've needed through history and want to continue to do. The problem we have is because they're different code bases based on different architectures, they are always different in terms of when they're released, because obviously DB2 for iSeries is part of OS 400, so it gets released to the field when OS 400 comes out, because they're together. It's not a separate product, and that's not true on the other platforms. They have a different release schedule. The second part is they adhere to a different set of requirements than we might adhere to, because, for example, they don't support native, or they don't support RPG, or whatever that might be. So they're going to come out with some different things on a different schedule than we do. All of the development laboratories collaborate. We all share ideas and concepts. And we all try to meet the SQL standard first, as well as try to incorporate the various technologies as we think they apply to our marketplace and our system. So what you're pointing out really is two things. One, there's some features and functions within DB2 for AIX that are not yet available on iSeries, DB2 for iSeries. And the inverse is true as well. Also, DB2 on the other platforms is not as integrated into the operating system as it is on OS 400. So they have different sets of tools to monitor, to interact with, to check the behavior of the database. On our system, iSeries Navigator, delivered through iSeries Access, is the interface to the operating system, and thus it's also the interface to DB2 for iSeries as part of the operating system. So we're trying to incorporate those same features and functions either through that interface so that we're consistent, or as part of the operating system so that we enjoy this integration. So some of the things that Query Patroller do, we can do as part of the operating system. There's some things that we can't do. Some of the features and functions that we have, they don't have yet, and vice versa. But we're trying to move forward together as a family to deliver similar functionality as appropriate for our marketplace.
Specifically on the SQL merge, interested in that, because if it's not available, then we'd probably go after it native.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Because that's a real nice feature to be able to insert or update in the same pass.
Right, right. That, to my knowledge, that's not available right now. You mentioned something about locking. Our locking mechanisms are state-of-the-art within OS 400 because we've had to do this for a long time, so we would have to look at some specifics, but I can guarantee you the locking that we do is very granular and very robust in terms of multi-user, and so they're, in some cases, playing catch-up.
Because, that was my assumption.
Yeah, they lock on a different basis. They do a lot more page locking versus row locking. But if you have some specific request, what I would like to see is send me a note. If you have a specific need for sampling or this merging, I would like to take that request, and then I can fold it into our planning process because we're always looking for real requirements, right, of someone out in the field that, hey, I've seen this, I think I need it, here's why I need it, when can I get it on iSeries? And I can use that when I talk to development.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And it appears there are no further questions on the phone lines today. Malcolm, do you have any on your end?
Let me just see. Something has come in electronically. Let me just take a look here, just a second.
Has SQL caught up with RPG for database performance?
Michael, could you answer that?
Sure, I could barely catch that good English accent.
Well, it was synthesized.
Yes, it was. If I understood the question, it revolves around the comparison between native I/O, let's say through RPG, versus SQL, whether it be static or dynamic. And we get this question a lot, frankly, where people want to know, can SQL go as fast as RPG? If I make a change to SQL, am I going to see the appropriate performance? The simple answer is, yes, SQL can indeed go as fast as native I/O, in some cases faster. But as I mentioned earlier in the presentation, it does depend on how we are using the database access and the underlying logic for data processing. I'll give you two simple examples. In one case, the native I/O will go faster than SQL if you're trying to do SQL just one row at a time and you're paying the cost to do the optimization, the full open of the cursor, and then the access of the data. Because in the case of the native I/O, there's no optimization. There's only open the file and then read the data. The underlying data access methods could be absolutely identical. In both cases, RPG native I/O could use a keyed logical file to read the data by key, and we could do the same thing through SQL, but we pay an additional cost with that optimization for that first run. But over time, you could get that, even that single SQL request, to go as fast as RPG. Let's take another case. I need to process in my batch program a million rows, and I need to read this data as fast as possible. In RPG, if I choose to read sequentially, basically that's going to run in a serial fashion, non-parallel. But with SQL, I can employ parallelism and actually read through that data with multiple threads or tasks automatically and go much faster through the data and process the data much faster. And to do that in RPG, you would have to take some overt action to program that parallelism and control that parallelism all programmatically. In effect, you would have to change your application. Whereas if you're using SQL, we can on the fly apply parallelism to just about any query plan.
Okay, thanks. Let me just, any other questions, Holly, on the phone?
We do. We'll take our next question from John Dale of H.B. Fuller.
Hi, I got a question, I think probably from Mike. I'll just throw this out quick. I'm just in the midst of doing some DB2400 tuning. I'm a system admin, so I don't have formal DBA experience, but since we don't have a DBA here, like most shops, for database tuning on the iSeries, I'm attempting some. And I've already done some work with the database monitor, and I've collected some samples, and I'm using Visual Explain. And I brought up a few SQL statements that had temporary indexes being built. And one thing I noticed, and I'm just going to throw this out as my question, when you highlight the temporary index item on the Visual Explain and it brings the information up on the right side, the section where it identifies the temp index and what it used to build the temp index, a lot of times I've noticed the keys that it used to build a temp index are displayed there, but then when you click on the advisor, it actually recommends a different index to build to address that temp index situation, and I've seen that quite often. I haven't done a whole lot of time into this, but I just in the cases where I've seen that, why are those different? And would I actually want to build both indexes to address that problem?
That's an excellent question, and one frankly that we get often.
Right.
The answer lies in understanding what the optimizer did with the lack of a permanent index. So without looking at your query specifically, my guess is somewhere along the line, the optimizer wanted to use an implementation that required an index, required that object to be there. For example, it might be a join. And so to use that join, to use the technique for the join, we need this index. So the optimizer said, I will create this index. But it also wants to cheat. So during the creation of this index, it might have employed some local selection. It might have, as it's reading the base table or file to build the index, it might have only selected out the data that it needs for the query. The resulting index, what you and I might think of as a keyed logical file, that resulting object is much smaller than it would otherwise be because it only contains the data that is needed for this particular query.
Okay.
And so what you're seeing is the result of the local selection, number one. Number two, you're seeing the keys based on how the optimizer is going to use that index. And in this example, it would be the join key. What happens with the advisor is only advising local selection. So somewhere in this query, you had local selection, where color equal purple, on a table, and no index over color, no index to read by key or to get statistics. So the optimizer recognized that right away, and it gave an advisory. It said, I really wish I had an index to do this local selection.
Okay.
What it didn't do is come back and sort of at the back end say, here's what I did to optimize your query, and let me put it all together. It can do some of that within Visual Explain, but it sounds like in your particular example, it only gave you the advice for the local selection, which you should follow first.
Okay.
But what you saw was sort of its best attempt to give you the best plan, and it cheated along the way. It did some things you weren't intending.
All right.
I cover this in the white paper.
All right.
And more importantly, in the appendix of the white paper, there's some example queries with what indexes I would create. Try to match up your example query to one of those examples and see if it doesn't make some sense as to what index you would create.
All right. But at a minimum, it's best to look at the advisor first and then possibly even try that and then see what happens next and then kind of iteratively see if you end up, you know, where the other advice came from.
That is one technique that I employ, as well as in your case, because you see the whole picture, you see the fact that we created a temp index and you get some indication as why, and you see that we recommend an index for local selection.
Yep.
Maybe combine those two pieces of information together. And again, I talk about that in the white paper.
All right. Well, I've already linked to that website, so I will download that too. So thank you.
All right. Thank you.
All right.
And once again, I'd like to remind the audience, it is star one for questions today. Malcolm, do you have any more on your end?
Let me just have a look. Oh, yeah, another one has just come in. Let me just get this one. Just a second.
If I have an application using DB2 on AIX, can I move this to iSeries fairly easily?
Doug, can you do that one?
Sure. So the question is, if I have a database or an application running on DB2 in AIX, what are the implications of moving that to DB2 in OS400? Of course, that's the kind of it depends answer that is hard to quantify. But, in terms of the SQL enhancements over the last few releases in DB2 and OS400 make the two DB2s fairly compatible in SQL, but I wouldn't say that there's going to be 100% compatibility. So unless you're actually looking at the stored procedures or the application's use of SQL, there may still be some changes to the code that have to occur. But for the most part, you know, data is going to come over fairly easily. Most of the SQL will be compatible. There's a document that is available on the website as well. There's a whole series of documents actually called porting guides and porting information that I would point you to from the website. And there's a porting guide for DB2 to DB2 type ports, for Oracle to DB2 type ports, as well as from Sybase or SQL Server type ports. And that would help to identify what some of the issues might be in bringing that application over. Like, for instance, earlier there was a comment about the 10-character naming convention at OS 400 uses, and obviously DB2 on P-Series uses long names, and DB2 and OS 400 also supports long names, so it's just some nice write-ups in how you deal with the 10-character limitation in OS 400 in that porting guide. So without knowing the actual application, it's hard to say, yeah, you'll be able to pick it up and move it over to DB2 in OS 400, you know, and run it with a save-restore type operation, but hopefully the DB2 compatibility will be fairly good to be able to bring that application and database over.
Any more questions from you, Holly?
It appears we'll take our next question again from Eric Sanji. Eric, your line is open.
Sorry. In the project I had mentioned earlier, we have used an IBM business partner to help us process some of the data that has come back up from the handhelds on the AS400 side. And one of the things that we need to get some more information about is being able to use multi-threading or multi-threading that application. It's a C-based program on the an ILE C-based program on the 400, and in order to have some of the processing work well, it would help to have the multi-threading. Can you guys point us to where we can find more information on?
Yeah, this is Doug and Eric again. I think what we're going to have to do is provide some follow-up for you on this. I don't think Mike or I could address that specific issue, but you shoot me an email, and what we can do is follow up with you on that specifically.
Great, thank you.
Holly, any more?
Malcolm, do you have any on your end at this time?
Let me see. Yeah, there's one just come in. Here goes. I think this is probably, Mike, this is probably for you. It looks a bit propeller head.
Okay.
We installed the SMP feature and did not see any significant performance improvements, so we disabled it. Is there some reason why we should look at this again?
Again, I've run into this because I work with SMP, the symmetrical multiprocessing feature, and parallelism quite a bit. So, again, this is a fairly common complaint or comment. And the situation is this. Somewhere along the line, someone has heard about symmetrical multiprocessing feature, which is an optional feature of OS 400, option 26. It allows or enables DB2 for iSeries to employ parallel methods. So somewhere along the line, someone acquires this particular feature. They either purchase it outright or it's part of their package when they get their system. And they believe that there's some magic within this feature, that magically everything is going to go much faster. Again, we have to look at query optimization and the computer science behind parallelism. First of all, parallelism through SMP is designed to trade resources for time. In other words, I've got some spare resources, CPU, IO, and I want to make my query request go faster by employing more resources for that given query. The SMP feature allows the database engine to take your one unit of work, your one query, break that query up, and spread that work across more resources in the hopes of going faster in that same unit of time. So that's the first thing. Second thing is, not all strategies and methods are parallel enabled. It's mostly for read-only queries. With the new SQL query engine, almost all of the strategies are parallel enabled. In other words, whatever strategy we employ, that strategy could potentially benefit from parallelism because it's enabled for parallelism. And then finally, it's the optimizer's job to determine whether or not your request will benefit from parallelism. And believe it or not, there are some cases where parallelism does not help. It doesn't make your query go any faster because there's a little bit of overhead with parallelism. So specifically to answer the question, there could be a case where the query will not benefit from parallelism. It's already going as fast as it can go on your particular system, and trying to run the query in parallel will just make it go slower. In other cases, the SMP feature can be used for things other than queries. The SMP feature also allows us to maintain indexes in parallel when we do blocked inserts. So if I have 10 indexes over a file or table, and I'm inserting data into that table, we have to maintain those indexes, and it has an effect on the I/O velocity, on the inserts. With parallelism, we maintain those 10 indexes in parallel, all at the same time. If you create a keyed logical file, or you create a SQL index, or your queries are creating temporary indexes on the fly, once again, the SMP feature can provide some help because we can create those indexes in parallel. This is not free. The cost of doing this is we're going to use more resources to create that index or keyed logical file in less time. And so somewhere along the line, someone has decided that I have to get this index created before I can move on, and I want to go as fast as possible, and I want to use all four processors to do it instead of one. So in that case, SMP would not provide much help in my query environment, but it might provide help when I create my indexes or do my inserts.
Okay, thanks. Holly, do you have any more questions on the phone?
Not at this time. And you, Malcolm?
Let me just check. No, that seems to be it. So I think we'll bring this call to a close.
Oh, I apologize. We just had two pop into the queue.
Oh, right. Okay, let's proceed with those.
Okay, we'll hear next from Saul Rodriguez of Baxter.
Hi, I just want to know if there is a plan to enhance the original Query 400 interface to use SQL so that it can take advantage of SQL Query Engine.
This is Mike. If we're talking about the query product, Query 400, that we've all used for years and years, the simple answer is no. That is an OS 400 application delivered as a licensed program product, and it does not use SQL as the interface. But what we would recommend is, as a replacement product that does use SQL, is QMF for Windows. This particular product we view as sort of the next version or the upgrade to what we've used as query. You also have the ability to import your query definitions from query into QMF for Windows. And QMF for Windows certainly does use SQL, and thus it can take advantage of the new engine. And it has some other robust features because it's a client-server app. There's some better reporting and formatting and things like that. So I suggest that you go to the iSeries website and you look at some of the solutions we offer and maybe search for QMF for Windows and give that a look.
Holly, do you have a second question, did you say?
I do. We'll hear next from Gary Zaloris.
Good morning, or afternoon, whichever the case may be. I'd seen in newsletters some references to the fact that native access to the database through RPG and so forth is supposed to go away. I think you may have dispelled that in this chat, but can you just verify that, in fact, that that's not going to happen, and maybe I misread it, so that the only way you're going to be able to get at it in the future outside the 400 is just through the SQL interface?
Hi, Gary. This is Mike. I can certainly dispel that. We have no intention of eliminating or doing away with or minimizing the native interface. First and foremost, DB2 for iSeries is part of OS 400 and continues to be part of OS 400. And as such, OS 400 needs to get to the data because we use DB2 as well for OS 400. We have no plans to take those interfaces away. It is true, however, that there's a minimum amount of investment and enhancement in those particular interfaces. In other words, as new functionality gets delivered within the database engine, more often than not, that functionality will only be available through SQL interfaces. We started this a long time ago. back in V4R3, we delivered encoded vector indexes. And if you notice, there is no CL command, no DDS, there's no mechanism to create an encoded vector index natively.
Yeah.
And that's a simple example. The other example is when we look at things like large object support. Most of that support comes through the SQL interface, not a native interface. Yet we don't prevent you from accessing a table with those objects because you could create a view and logically eliminate those columns and still get to the data. So the native interface is going to be there. The high-level languages will still allow native access. But most of the enhancements, a lot of the exciting things, the things that are occurring in the industry that we've talked about earlier, are going to be delivered through SQL. And frankly, we continue to talk about a hybrid environment where applications may have both over time.
Okay, thank you.
Holly, any more questions?
It appears there are no further questions at this time.
Let me check here. No, we don't seem to have any more here either. So I think I'll bring this call to a close. It's been an extremely good call. Thank you, Doug. Thank you, Mike, and thank you, Holly. I just wanted to draw everybody's attention to something very important, which is that the next iSeries Nation activity is not going to be a chat. It's actually our first ever webcast, and it's not on our usual day of a Thursday. It's in just over 2 weeks' time on Tuesday, May the 4th. I can't talk too much about the detail of this except to say that it's something big, and it has been specially scheduled, and it is our first ever iSeries Nation webcast. It'll be coming from Common, which will be going on in San Antonio on Tuesday, May the 4th. And the speakers will be Frank Soltis, whom everybody knows as the chief scientist for the product, Al Zoller, who's the general manager for the product, and Tim Alpers. Tim is the product development team, the PDT leader. Those three people will be talking on our first ever webcast. If you could you register on that? We've already got, when I looked this morning, we had 970 registrations for this thing already. Could you, if you've not already registered, go to the site to register for this webcast on May the 4th? The URL for the site is the usual one of ibm.com, and then it's /eServer/iSeries/something big. So ibm.com/eServer/iSeries/something big to register for the Tuesday, May the 4th, first ever iSeries Nation webcast. And I think that's all we have to say for today. So please join us on May the 4th at 11 a.m. Eastern Time for our webcast. Thank you, everyone, for being with us today. Look forward to seeing you all on May the 4th.
And that does conclude today's conference call. Thank you all for your participation, and have a great day.